President Trump is talking of another territorial acquisition by the United States.
He says he wants the U.S. to take over Gaza, the current home of many Palestinians. Trump brought up the idea during a visit to the White House by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out.
Turn it into seaside real estate. The president did not rule out the possibility of using U.S. troops while sending the current residents to live somewhere else not yet named. In just over 2 weeks since his inauguration, the president has called for the U.S. to take over a total of 4 countries or territories: Greenland, Canada, the Panama Canal, and now a war-torn 25-mile strip of land on the Mediterranean.
Joining us now to discuss is NPR international correspondent Ayah Batraoui in Dubai. So what's President Trump's vision of Gaza look like?
Well, Trump already signaled clearly many times that he thinks Palestinians should be relocated outside of Gaza. And he says Gaza is now a demolition site, that it's uninhabitable. And this is largely true after nearly 16 months of war and Israeli airstrikes that also killed nearly 50,000 Palestinians, with the UN and Gaza's health officials saying at least 10,000 more bodies are buried under that rubble. Now, rather than live in what he called a hellhole, Trump said yesterday the nearly 2 million Palestinians in Gaza should go elsewhere, other countries.
This can be paid for by neighboring countries of great wealth. It could be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 12. It could be numerous sites, or it could be one large site.
It's really unclear if this is actual policy ideas being formulated or his musings at this point. But Trump, who's, you know, an international real estate developer as well, said he envisions the U.S. taking over this coastal enclave long term and turning it into what he called the Riviera of the Middle East.
We're going to take over that piece. We're going to develop it, create thousands and thousands of jobs. And it'll be something that the entire Middle East can be very proud of.
And Trump has said that it's an idea that everyone he's spoken to loves. But is it something that Palestinians in Gaza would support?
You know, half of those 2 million people in Gaza are children. They need security, stability. They haven't been in school for 2 years now. There isn't even electricity or running water in Gaza. So yeah, some families would leave given this reality. They have said that to us. But also, people have lived in Gaza for generations, and leaving would mean the end of any hopes for a Palestinian state. And in Israel, expelling Palestinians from Gaza was an idea that had mostly been relegated to the far right corners of Israeli society. You know, Israel's prime minister didn't comment directly on Trump's idea yesterday, but he praised his, quote, willingness to think outside the box with fresh ideas. And he said this.
After the jaws drop, people scratch their heads and they say, you know, he's right.
All right. So that's one view from the Middle East. But what are other countries in the region saying?
So the major Arab states, they don't want Hamas to rule Gaza, but they also don't see mass displacement as a solution either. And certainly publicly, I don't see how they could get behind this. Now, Egypt has made clear it will not accept the forced expulsion of Palestinians. Egypt has called this an injustice that they won't take part in. And Saudi Arabia, one of the countries of great wealth that the president referred to that would be needed to pay for whatever comes next in Gaza, says it rejects attempts to displace Palestinians. They say their position is non-negotiable and that they've made this clear to the Trump administration.
That's NPR's Ayah Batraoui. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Trump administration has started sending migrants from the United States to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
The first plane load arrived yesterday. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt gave this reason.
President Trump is not messing around, and he's no longer going to allow America to be a dumping ground for illegal criminals from nations all over this world.
The president has said he wants to make room for 30,000 migrants at Guantanamo.
NPR's Sasha Pfeiffer has been talking with some lawyers who question the legality of that plan. So how many people have been sent there so far?
The U.S. has not released an official figure, but it appears to be a small number, possibly just one flight with about a dozen migrants on board. The Department of Homeland Security says they're all members of a Venezuelan organized crime group called Tren de Aragua, and overnight it released photos of handcuffed men in gray sweatpant outfits, some with neck tattoos, being led onto military planes. And several hundred U.S. service members were deployed to Guantanamo in the past few days to prepare for these arrivals.
And where are they going to be held in Guantanamo?
The U.S. says they will not be housed alongside the accused foreign terrorists held at the military prison there. Instead, Guantanamo's U.S. naval base has had a detention facility used for migrants intercepted at sea, usually Haitians and Cubans. It's had that for years. But it's been mostly empty for a long time. It's not ready for large numbers of people. So the military has also circulated photos of service members putting up green army tents to help with what it's calling a migrant operations center expansion. And the defense secretary says migrants will be held at Guantanamo only temporarily until the U.S. finds other countries to take them.
Okay. Now, to the legality question, I mean, can the Trump administration legally send migrants from the U.S. to Guantanamo? Can they do that?
I've gotten conflicting answers from lawyers. Some say yes, some say no. One who thinks it is not legal is a lawyer at UCLA named Ahilan Arulanatham. He says U.S. immigration law dictates where these migrants can be sent. And if Cuba has presumably not agreed to take them, he says it's an illegal deportation. But Steve Lodick at Georgetown Law School thinks it's legal. He argues a deportation is not official until the U.S. has relinquished custody of the migrants, and that won't happen until they're moved to another country after being at Guantanamo. But you know that they disagree, suggests we're in murky legal territory. Vladek also thinks the Trump administration is sending migrants there as a kind of macho performance art. Here's Steve Vladek.
All you're doing this for is the symbolism, to be able to say, look, I moved these folks from the detention center across town to Guantanamo. It's all like very, very expensive flash with very little substance.
So we mentioned symbolism. I mean, what symbolism is there by sending migrants to Guantanamo?
You know, he points out it would be cheaper and easier to hold them somewhere in some big open space elsewhere in the U.S. But by shipping them to Guantanamo, you send a certain message. Here's how the editor of the website Lawfare, Ben Wittes, put it.
Are you using this facility because it has the stain of the name Guantanamo? And of course, the answer is yes. That's exactly why he's attracted to it. He's attracted to it for the same reason that it repels human rights groups.
And by the way, all those people I interviewed are skeptical that 30,000 migrants will ever end up at Gitmo, given the legal questions plus financial, political, practical barriers. But even sending a handful is getting a ton of public attention, which is part of the point.
Yeah, NPR's Sasha Pfeiffer, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
The Trump administration is telling all employees of the United States Agency for International Development to stop doing their jobs.
Yeah, the workers are told to go on administrative leave by Friday at 11:59 p.m., according to a new directive sent to agency staff globally and posted on the website. This comes after more than 2 weeks of chaos at the agency, as the president and Elon Musk said they were in the process of shutting it down.
NPR global health correspondent Fatma Tanis joins us now to tell us all about this. So who exactly signed off on this?
Well, it was a short note. It was not signed by any official, and it said that there would be some exceptions, that essential personnel expected to continue working would be notified by Thursday afternoon. Now, around 10,000 people work for USAID. Most of them are serving overseas, and they've been given 30 days to pack up and come back home. The note ended with the words, "Thank you for your service."
So what are you hearing from the people who work there?
Well, they're shocked and gutted. I spoke to several officials at the agency who didn't want to be named because they're not authorized to speak publicly. And they said that this is effectively a shutdown of the agency, and they call the process inhumane. Now, for staff who are overseas, there are other concerns. People have kids in school, spouses who have jobs, they have pets. It's going to be hard to uproot their lives in 30 days, and many are expecting the next step to be mass layoffs. I also heard concerns about what this means for the U.S. I spoke with Susan Reichle, a retired USAID official, and here's how she put it.
This is taking away a critical element of our national security, and it's affecting people's lives from not just a humanitarian perspective, but we're leaving a huge vacuum for China and Russia.
I mean, it seems like the Trump administration wants to get rid of this agency. Why would they want to do that?
Well, President Trump has been saying that USAID is too independent, that it is full of, quote, radical left lunatics, and that its programs are not in line with his America First policy. Now, people who work in the agency, they say their allegiance is to the Constitution and not to any political party. Many of them served under multiple administrations. And they say that everything they do down to the countries and the issues that they work on is approved by Congress. Now, since Congress chartered USAID, legal experts say the administration doesn't have the authority to abolish it on its own. But there are still a lot of questions about how this is going to play out.
And they've had programs all over the world. So what happens now to all of those things?
Well, for now, most programs receiving U.S. foreign aid have been halted. And you know, there are multiple disease outbreaks going on, Ebola in East Africa. There's a different hemorrhagic fever in Bolivia. These are part of USAID's work overseas. Here's Matt Kavanaugh, the director of global health policy at Georgetown University.
The USAID team was literally preparing to respond to these new outbreaks that occurred literally as the president was being inaugurated. And now that's stopped.
So have distributions of HIV medication, mpox vaccines, a therapeutic food for malnourished kids. Millions of people around the world aren't getting those services anymore.
All right, so a lot still up in the air. That's NPR's Fatma Tanis. Thank you very much for letting us know about all this.
Thank you.